Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here.
Reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance.
Like your first home expansion.
Or your first big lightning strike.
There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents.
Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Finally, after 5 years of product failures, my 35th offer actually worked. And my next 55 products generated over $11 million in sales in just 4 years. But after seeing the flaws in my baby business, I decided to shut it all down and restart from scratch, as entrepreneurs do. Follow me and the other capitalist pig-loving entrepreneurs as I continue my journey to $100 million in sales. I'm your host, Steve J. Larson, and welcome to Season 2 of Sales Funnel Radio.
What's going on, everyone? It's Steve Larson. This might be a fast episode. You know, so I did the first day of my Titans of Industry Mastermind yesterday, and I'm driving in for the second right now. And, you know, it's interesting. Something I have to repeatedly remind myself of, and I'm hoping that this also resonates with people who listen to this podcast, is that, like, you as the expert, whether a very seasoned expert or a very new expert, it's very easy to begin believing that you got to take the ball way past the point for the customer. You know what I mean? Like, let me give you an example. Yes, day one of this mastermind is proof of what I'm talking about. So Titans of Industry are the people that are past seven figures, and it doesn't always have to be in just their specific business, just as long as it's in their career in general. And the reason I set that as a milestone for being a Titan is because statistically, only 3% of companies ever make a million. And so just a million, you know, in my book, you're above 97, that's above 97% of people. So, I mean, that's, yeah, you're a Titan by that point. And I know it's not where people want to stop, but like, it is just, it's something to notice. So anyway, yesterday, one of the biggest questions people were asking was like, how do I prioritize marketing? You know, I need more leads, but, you know, and so we went over some of the questions. I'm not going to go over all the questions, but some of the questions the group is asking for. And I do this at the beginning of every single one of my events. And I just basically go literally person through person. And I say, what are you struggling with in your business? And I make a big list. And so now I'm not guessing. And I'm like, ooh, this is exactly what they need from me to get progress and get over hurdles, right? Now, one of the biggest things that stood out to me yesterday, and why I'm doing this podcast real quick, I wanted to today talk a little bit about the patterns of the things that tend to sell the most on the internet. Now, this is absolutely one of those experiences where, or one of those podcasts where it's like, I have such a hard time with blanket statements, right? But there are patterns, and there are absolutely, you know, principles that are the things that make things work the best, and, you know, all that. So what I'm saying is take what I'm about to walk through here with a little bit of a grain of salt, because it's funny. I remember I was doing this workshop once, and this guy was like, what's the price point? This was easily 8 years ago. And this guy was like, what's the max amount of money you've ever seen, you know, and sell on a webinar? And I was like, oh, well, usually you tend to see it around like the $1,000 range, but records are made to be broken. And not that that was any kind of record back then, but he came back like 6 months later and he just threw it in my face. He's like, I sold something for 30 grand on a webinar. And I was like, great. That means it worked. Like, you, sir, showed me. You know, I was like, I'm not saying that you can't, you know, my point is that there's a lot of, there's a lot of room for play in all marketing. You know, the principles remain, but the tactics change all the freaking time, you know, and people are always inventing. It's a very innovative field to be in, marketing, you know. So now, the first time I ever really heard about what I'm going to talk about today, it was actually from Tim Ferriss. And I was working on building a sales team, for my door-to-door job that I had just picked up. You know, I was in the middle of college, and I knew that I wanted to go learn sales because Robert Kiyosaki said, if you're going to be an entrepreneur but you don't know how to sell, you're kidding yourself, is basically what he said. And I was like, oh, crap, I don't know how to sell. So I was like, what's the equivalent of the boot camp of the sales world? And I was like, oh, my gosh, it's door-to-door sales. So I went and I literally just joined a pest control sales company to go knock doors. To learn how to sell. This is way before I was ever on the internet. It's way before, I don't know what internet marketing was. In fact, I'm pretty sure that back then I still thought that sales and marketing were the same thing, right? And that just because, like, I didn't understand the difference between all these things, you know? So anyway, so what I used to do, I don't know if I've ever really told you guys about this. What I used to do, I really wanted to, you know, I just have the personality where, like, when I go in on something, it's both feet, you know? And if I'm not both feet, I really haven't decided. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just have the personality where, like, I go all in on something or not at all. Like, there's really not a lot of middle ground for me. It's like, I'm all in or not. And I knew that. And so with this pest control stuff, there's a big point to this, okay? With this pest control stuff, the sales manager that brought me in told me, he's like, hey, when you go recruit people and bring them in, we give you like a little override on the sales of any person who comes in. And I was like, sweet. I was like, how many sales does the average person do? And he told me, and I was like, well, if I could double it by just getting people, that'd be awesome. So I started trying to recruit tons of people. And I ended up bringing like 12 people that summer, which is awesome. But the way that I found them was really funny. I had just started learning a little bit about like direct response and mailers and flyers. And I learned that there was a 1-2% response rate for every 100 flyers that you put out. And I didn't know anything about the internet marketing, and it, you know, but I definitely had started like becoming aware of this stuff. And I was studying a lot of it on my own. So I was like, okay, 100 flyers. And the reason I knew that metric is because I was doing so much real estate stuff back then. And I was putting out like 100 mailers to, you know, people who've inherited a property so I could try and buy it from them. And I knew it's a 1-2% response rate. So I was like, well, what if I walked around all the dorms and all campus and all this stuff? And what I'll do is I don't know how many thousands and thousands and thousands of flyers I coded across campus, but I basically recruited. I just would pop in an audiobook and I would walk around flyering campus and specifically dorm rooms and places where I thought guys would want to come and be a pest control person, and I would get an override on their sales. And so I did that religiously for like 3-4 months. And the book that I was listening to, sorry, it's maybe too much backstory, but it's a podcast. You can go long form on podcast, right? But that's what I was doing. And the book that I was listening to, you know, I it's funny. I had this pattern of printing 100 sheets of paper, and then I would cut it in half. And so I had 200 half sheet flyers. And I would just grab a stack of 100, knowing that I was going to get probably one person that day to come to our meeting, our pest control, hey, let's come recruit you. I don't remember what the rate was on someone who actually said yes, right? So it's not like every 100 person I had someone. It's not like I only put out 1,200 flyers because 12 people came. But, you know, I'd get 1-2 people per 100 flyers, at least to the meetings. And then from there, we would get them to come do the summer of pest control with us. I'm so glad that I was a sales guy way before I ever learned anything about marketing or funnels. It just shaped everything that I learned so much better. You know what I mean? Anyway. So, I digress. The book that I was listening to, as I would just spend hours and hours and hours walking around campus, was the book, The 4-Hour Workweek. I had already read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and it completely changed my mind and my life. Already, just my mindset already. I was like, holy cow. And I would read it literally as I was walking between classes. There were times I did walk into something or someone. I got pretty good at walking and reading. I did that for a long time, man. I was like, I just thirsty, man. I just wanted as much knowledge. You know, I failed out of my first semester of college because I didn't know how to learn. Well, 4 years later, I learned how to learn. That's why I graduated so much later in life. I learned how to learn, and I just got addicted to it. And I was like, I want to know everything. And so I was literally reading, and these were not books that were given to me by professors or classes or whatever. I just was like, I want to know about this. I want to know about this. I want to know about this. And I just devoured. And, well, the book I was devouring this time, because I needed my hands to hand out stuff, was The 4-Hour Workweek. And Tim Ferriss said something in The 4-Hour Workweek that really, The 4-Hour Workweek is one of those books I have just listened to many times. Many times. And I'm a huge Tim Ferriss nerd. Tim Ferriss, if we ever hear this, you freaking changed my life and I want to talk to you. anyway, so I didn't get online or anything like that until I heard Tim Ferriss. Tim Ferriss said something in his book, and he said, one of the best things you can go sell is information. I was like, what? ClickFunnels didn't exist yet. It's way before I ever learned who Russell was, far before I learned really almost any internet guru. There was maybe like, I think I was listening to Pat Flynn from Smart Passive Income. And there's another real estate guy that I just devoured. His name was Sean Terry. And he was awesome too. Sorry, we're all trying to take this turn right here, and we're all just sitting here. Sup? Dropped my kids off at school. Information. So let me get back to the point, which is that there are certain products and certain business types that best fit the internet. If you are an expert or, you know, have some kind of key, unique knowledge or something like that. And so, really an important thing to understand, right? You have to understand that a really good offer does not outdo a poor business model, right? Much of the market you choose, much of the customer that you choose, you know, much of the business model that you choose is actually predetermining a massive amount of your success. It's predetermining. It's out of your hands, right? I could be the best at running a restaurant on the planet, but you know the restaurant business, like you're going to make like 6% margin. You know what I mean? That's like, isn't that what a McDonald's makes? You know what I'm saying? It's like, so no matter how good the food is, just the nature of that industry and the market you're going into, it's very expensive. And so people will get really frustrated and they go like, wow, well, I made the best widget possible. I'm like, yeah, but did you know that others in the widget business, that type of business is not actually prone to cash flowing very hard, right? Right? Or if your goal is enterprise value, it's like that kind of business doesn't actually grow that valuable of a company, you know, or whatever it is. So yeah, it's a matter of like being an entrepreneur is really mostly about the offer and the product and solving a really amazing problem with an amazing solution. But being a business owner, right? That's how you make the organization, the company organization as a whole more valuable. It has less to do with the product and more to do with the organization, right? That's enterprise value. That's a very different mindset though. So anyway, that's the only reason I'm bringing this up is like, I continually get reminded of this principle, which is that not all business models online are created equally. Cash is not created equally. Profit is not created equally. And there are certain patterns of the internet business that tend to do better in terms of cash flow, lead flow, joy to just run. All right, it is my personal opinion that the e-com business, I just don't like running it. And I know that people don't like there's a lot of people who will not agree with me on that, but I gotta sell 100 widgets a day to make the profit that one thing in the info business makes. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, right? And you tend to find really quickly that it takes just about as much effort to sell something expensive as it does something cheap. And so it's like, I got to sell 100 people. You know what I mean? I have 100 interactions to do with an e-com thing Whereas I could just do one interaction per day, same amount of effort and energy. It's literally a hundredth of the effort and mind games, you know, all that stuff. So anyway, so that's what I mean though, is like, and in e-com, it's like the profits, you know, we're selling swag. Our swag costs like, I can't remember, it's like $15 out the door, printed and shipped and everything. We sell it for like $29 or something like that. Like, and that's if I didn't have to pay for the sale, right? That's if without ads. There's not a lot of margin in the e-com game, you know? And I'm not saying that you can't do that. And I'm not saying that people say, well, e-com's cool because it makes up for it in volume. Totally. I just made a personal choice. My whole point is that not all business models smash. Right. And I had to explain this to a lady probably 6 years ago. I was coaching her and she was making homemade dog food. And she's like, hey, the dog food out there, it's straight up poison for our dogs. I got very, very passionate. I was like, that's cool. That's awesome. Good on her. Right. She found a problem. She solved it. It's amazing. Homemade dog food. And she was selling her homemade dog food locally to just all these different, you know, households and stuff. And I was like, she's like, help me with my marketing. And I was like, very cool. Very hard to create marketing when you don't have any targets. So I said, we need to create some targets so that we know what kind of marketing to create. Therefore, what's your goal? And she's like, I want $1 million. I was like, sweet. I'm assuming $1 million profit. She goes, yeah. I was like, let's back this up. What margin do you have, right? And this is just stuff that most people don't do. Like, and I want you to do that listening to this podcast, right? What's the cost to fulfill a single item for you? A single sale, right? And so I started working this out with her. I was like, what's the cost? Now, what's the cost of the business regardless of how many widgets you sell, right? That's fixed cost and variable cost, right? Just very simply, very simple accounting numbers. This is nothing like fancy, right? What's it cost for you to be in business? What's it cost for you to sell something, right? We kind of came up with what her monthly nut number is. And then we also came up with, you know, what her margin is. And I just did the math. And I can't, it's like 6 years ago, so I don't remember the exact numbers, but I remember it was like thousands, right? She would have to sell thousands of households her dog food, like every month, in order to make $1 million a year. And I just remember seeing her face. She goes, she literally said, she goes, I don't remember verbatim, but she said something like, oh my gosh, I'm already getting up super early in the morning. I'm already spending all this time making this dog food. She was still kind of like a one man show kind of, you know what I mean? And she had a tough time like really grabbing what I was saying. She didn't have a tough time grabbing it. It just hit hard. And she was like, oh my gosh. And I said, no offense. You will make more money faster by teaching others how to do a dog food business rather than doing the dog food business. And I said, now, I have a hard time with people who are teaching something and don't do it themselves. I think that's weird. Right? There's people that do that. I think it's slimy, it's weird, it's dumb, right? So I said, I would still leave your dog food business running, but bring an employee in, spend all your time teaching others how to make a dog food business. You'll make so much more money, so much faster. You could go sell a course for $500 or $1,000 or $5,000. Hardly any cost to fulfill, but it's very valuable information. And bam, right? That's way more profitable of a business model, but the exact same skill set, the exact same knowledge, the exact same expertise, just applied to a different business model. And she was like, oh my gosh. I don't remember, you know, this was part of like an onboarding thing. I think it was something I was doing for Russell back then. So I don't remember what happened to this lady afterwards. But the point was, and this is what I want you guys to understand as well. Really think about what it is that you are, your business model. And if you kind of like, and I'm bringing this up explicitly to get to the point that the best business models tend to be, and this depends what you want. So I can't, you know, I'm not, someone's like, I want to be an e-com. I'm like, sweet, awesome. Well, there's more profitable e-com models compared to other e-com models, but I'm just talking in massive blanket statements, huge generalities, and I'm talking straight numbers, not passion. Okay. All right. Information is mind-blowing how incredible it is, right? Now, the information space has taken a massive hit. because of ChatGPT and all this AI and stuff like that, I do feel like the value of information has dropped just a little bit, but that doesn't mean that the space as a whole is dead. And I've seen a lot of people just kind of close up shop. They're just like, I don't know what to do. I can't make as much money as I was before. It's like, well, the information space just shifted. It didn't actually, it's not like it's gone. It just shifted. It shifted the way we apply it. All right. So that's all I want you to do is the point of the episode is to sit back and go and recognize that, like, wow, a good offer does not outdo a poor, and I mean that in like rich versus poor, a poor business model. All right. Passion does not at all make up for lack in business sense or rather lack of a marketing plan. Right? Most people are like, I'm just really passionate about it. Okay, passion's not a marketing plan. Right? I'm surely passionate. You all you have to do is get the product in front of people, it'll sell itself. That's stupid. Right? That's dumb. Anyone who's done anything successfully knows that that is some of the worst crap on the planet that people believe out there. Well, I just have to get it in front of people and it sells itself. No. The entrepreneur mindset believes that. The marketer mindset knows that is a poor, poor, poor belief. And again, I mean that in the true sense of the word poor. All right. Entrepreneur is not the money roll. Marketer is. And what helps marketers sell a lot is, I'm just going to say it. And I want you to know right now, I'm not your financial advisor. I am not your lawyer. I am not at all, you know, there's good ways to pull off a business model and there's bad ways to pull off a business model. All right. All right. Just like, it's like when someone, I'll have people, what I'm about to say, some people be like, well, isn't that like a kind of a weird thing to go do? I'm like, no, like we could say that a car is dangerous and it is, but that's why there's traffic lights and there's lanes and we all have little signalers in our car that say if we're going to shift lanes and we have odometers that tell us how fast we're going and we have rules and laws and then suddenly the car becomes this amazing, powerful, wonderful tool that blesses all of our lives because I do an hour and a half of driving every morning to drop my girls off at school, right? It's so fun. I get to just talk with them and hear their thoughts. It's, I used to kind of like dread it, you know, but now, whatever, you know? Anyway, so that's my point though. That's all I'm trying to say is recognize that all power can be used for good or bad. It has nothing to do with the thing itself. All right. So the business model I'm referring to is information, but specifically the business model, well, the product is information. The business model I'm referring to though is really those helping people get into business or rather helping an existing company grow and scale their sales. Let me just finish this thought, and I want to give you just a quick story also on this. Like, really think what I'm telling you, okay? Anything that helps a business create more cash, it is easier to charge more money for that thing. This is one of the reasons why I want to somehow position every offer towards the make money industry. Right, the make money industry. So for example, if I'm gonna help a company get more leads, which is really what I do, right? We build funnels, we build offers, we build messaging, and it's all about getting leads and sales, right? Sales flow is the name of the game, right? That's what Steve Larson does, right? So companies hire me. So think about it. If I go help a company get more leads, it's easier for me to charge more money compared to other industries. For example, let's say I'm going in the health industry. The health industry has a hard time charging a lot of money simply because it's harder for the customer who spends money to know when they'll get that money back. It does not replenish itself as easily. And when the customer is coming into a health or even a relationships marketplace, this is a pattern that I saw so long ago. I made the decision. I was like, I'm always gonna sell in the make money space for businesses, right? So you think about this, is like if the customer or the prospective customer is considering making a purchase and they know that their purchase is of a thing or of a solution that's literally meant to help them make more money, it's easier to justify the sale. Therefore, I can charge more and the velocity of my sales goes up, right? The sale is faster, the number of the sales goes up, because people are like, well, if I go spend, you know, $5,000 on this, but it's literally something that is designed to help me make an additional $5,000 per month, right? This thing, I can recoup my investment, which is now, it is an investment, and I can recoup within 30 days. But if I go to someone and I say, hey, this program, which is about health, it's going to help you get six-pack abs, and it's a $5,000 program at six-pack abs, the person doesn't know. Like, you'll get a better customer by literally charging more and by virtue of that, but the person doesn't know when they're going to get that $5,000 back. It slows down the cycle of the sale. It slows down the speed. It slows down the velocity of the sale. It slows down the frequency of the sale. It's not a bad thing, I know, but it gets a very specific customer at that point. Not a bad thing, but now we've just robbed ourselves of the ability of going broad. We can't go broad market anymore because how many people are gonna spend a $5,000 program on getting six-pack abs? People do, way more than that as well. But notice that's not a widespread market thing. Does that make sense? This is a really key thing. So those of you, so every time I teach this principle, I always get people who are like, uh-oh, I sell six-pack abs. Or someone's like, uh-oh, I help relationships get better. Or uh-oh, and they solved a legitimate issue. So in that scenario, the way that we position, you know, I'm a marketer, I'm a copywriter, I'm very good at it. And the way that we still make those things unique is I still want to have the make money industry somehow involved in my health offer. Or I want to make somehow the make money industry or participants of that industry somehow involved in the relationship offer. So how do I do that? Guys, I know I'm going deep on this, but like really, I want you to think about it. Let me give you a quick example. Well, let me say the principle. I'll give an example real quick. All right. So let's say that I'm selling a six-pack abs thing, just to keep the example the same. I'm just making this up off the top of my head. What if instead of six-pack abs, and I'm like, man, I want to charge a higher amount of money for this thing. The way that I do it is I just include those from the make money industry as my avatar. For example, the make money industry, I could be like this. Six-pack abs for busy CEOs. Ooh, see how we just crossed two marketplaces. We just crossed two industries together. Or this is, you know what? This is six-pack abs.
Hey, I hope you're enjoying the episode. Let me interrupt for just 1 minute here. One time I was speaking on the stage at this event, this guy picked up a microphone and he said, Steve, when do Facebook ads begin paying off? And I remember looking confused and just asking back, like, what do you mean? He repeated the question and said, well, we've been spending a lot of money on Facebook ads for a long time now, and we're just wondering when this begins to all pay off, when we actually start making money from the ad. I said, wait, Facebook ads are not an investment. They don't pay off someday. This is direct response marketing. So if we don't get a payoff within the first few days, we turn off the ads. How much money have you spent? I will never forget the look at this guy's face as he realized he had the completely wrong mindset about ads. And he said, we've spent over $250,000 without any return on ads at all. My stomach fell out of my body. Look, this is direct response marketing, meaning we measure the direct response of our marketing. That's why ads are the holy grail of marketing. They're not an investment that pays off someday, sorry colleges, because every dollar spent on ads should return with another dollar very soon. That's what my good friend John Parks and I are doing the Chief Ads Officer Workshop on May 15th through the 17th. John has spent over $150 million in Facebook ads profitably and managed the ads accounts for some of the biggest names out there. John is going to take 50 business owners through his unique Facebook ads process while you follow along. At the end, you're going to have your own account running. I simply asked John to show us what's working best today in the ads world right now. John told me that one of the hardest parts of running ads today is finding the right person to do it. Traditional org charts don't really have a spot for the ad buyer, so this workshop will help you install a new role, whether in-house or if you go hire, the new role of Chief Ads Officer inside your business. This workshop is both for those who want to learn ads themselves or for those who want to learn to communicate with their media buyer better. The workshop is only happening one time in person in my event studio in Boise, Idaho, May 15th through the 17th, and all the details are at chiefadsofficer.com. Go to chiefadsofficer.com right now to save your seat and get more details. We can't wait to see you there. Let's get back to the episode.
For executives, six-pack abs for people who spend more than half their month on a plane. six-pack abs, right? Now what we're doing is we're saying it's still six-pack abs, but I'm getting more specific on who this is meant to go after. And I'm going after an avatar. I'm going after a dream customer that literally has more money by design. And what it does is it stacks more cards in my favor. By doing that, now I've literally positioned my offer to win. I'm choosing a better business model, and I'm actually choosing an avatar and a dream customer that is poised to have more money, that is poised to be hot and bothered that they don't have six-pack abs, that is poised, right? Now, I would start saying stories like, you remember before you started your business, you were an athlete, you were a go-getter, right? You were doing races, you did competitions and stuff. You loved the feeling of competing, and that the gift of competing blessed your life and business as you went into business. But this weird thing happened, which you really swore wouldn't, but it did, which you went out and you got successful and you kind of gave up some of those good habits. And even if you've kept the good habits, you know, there's stress and all the cortisol that's in your body because you're a business owner now that's made and actually won. Oh my gosh, you have gotten a little tire around that gut of yours now. You actually have a gut now. Where did the six pack go? This is one of your identity pieces. This is one of your marks of being a successful human being was your physique. But where is that now? So now you have the money, but you don't have the body. Six-pack abs, high-end program. I'm going to help you get this back, $5,000. Right? Now I can tell those stories. And these are stories of loss. Right? I'm telling the story of redemption. The offer becomes the solution to redemption. Right? And now I can go sell. And because we're actually literally approaching and going after people who have money, who have felt the experience and the emotion of loss of this. Like, that's copy that I would write for a six-pack thing for a $5,000 program. Most people are like, I'm going to sell my six-pack ab thing for $27, right? And I get it. But if you see, like, what I'm doing right here, I'm actually taking the same skill set and just positioning it differently, and suddenly we can add a lot more zeros to the end. And have a still take advantage of the reality that the info product space and is one of the best spaces on the planet. And really helping people make more money is one of the best businesses on the internet. So I would tie the story in even more and I would say, hey, check it out. Not only have you lost, I'm just making this up off the top of my head. I'm on a roll, so I'm going to keep going, right? Not only have you lost that physique, it's actually affected your confidence. And there's no way that you can say that it actually has not also affected your income. This is affecting how you show up, right? The literal bottom line now of your, it didn't matter that much, but as the years have stacked on both the, you know, the inches around your waist, it's also stacked on, a little bit more like lack of confidence has also stacked on. Right? It's affected how you show up in the business space now. All right, what could you do in the next 6 months to get six-pack abs? You know it'll take time and you're willing to put in the effort, but you also know that you're busy and you don't want to think about what you got to go do. You wish someone else could come tell you, right? And then I would come up with some epic domain that's like the unique selling proposition piece. And so we've taken a health thing but positioned it for the business space and money space. And we've related it back to how it makes more money. I literally did this with... I had some clients back, it was before the pandemic. They have physical yoga studios. Right. So when the scamdemic happened, which I'll keep calling it that, right? We all know. So I'm just going to call it that. I'll die in this hill. They were kind of screwed because they're like, we got to close up shop. No one's willing to be more than, 6 feet away from each other. And so there are physical yoga studios. They had studios all over the place, all over the nation. And so we had to transition their stuff on the internet. And the way they saved their butt is by switching to the internet, but also some of the positioning stuff I'm talking about right now. Yoga for professionals, yoga for money people, yoga for, right? And now we've chosen a rich audience. So even if my thing and my product, my offer does not directly relate to the make money industry, which is the easiest industry to be in, right? I've positioned it that way. Relationships, no different, right? I would create, let's say that you help marriages stay together, or you help, right? Or maybe it's a dating thing. It's like, what do you do? I help people get in relationships. Oh, cool. that's way too broad and it's not related at all to the make money industry. Okay, well then how do we shift it? Well, the way I would shift it is I would say something like, you started a successful business and now you're worried that, let's say that I'm going after men, like men's confidence in dating, right? Which I've had clients in that area. I would position it and have said this stuff to clients. It's like, what I would do is I would just go after people and I would say, hey, look, hey, men, you started a successful business, which has created an interesting problem for you in dating. Number one, you're a little bit nervous, and I'm going to speak in stereotypes here, okay? So no one get pissy, but also recognize that marketers deal in stereotypes, all right? So just listen to what I'm going to say and recognize that if it has any kind of emotional trigger or response in you, that's why I'm saying it. I'm a marketer. My job is to elicit emotion towards action. So I would create content. I would create marketing and copy that said something like this. Hey, guy, you created a successful business. And as fun as that's been, you also have noticed kind of a hole in your life that you're actually not in a relationship, you know, or you've had little tiny flings and relationships here and there, but nothing that's like long lasting. And you want that. You feel like you've mastered the business world. And of course, there's always more to go. But now you want to start getting, you want relationship. Your business has actually caused a little bit of an issue with you in dating, which is that number one, you don't know how to always say what you do. All right, because it's not as easy as saying I'm an accountant or something like that. But second of all, once a woman finds out, right, you've experienced, and can you think of the faces and the names of some of the women that when they find out what you do, they kind of lay it on kind of thick because you're rich, or at least compared to, you know, people who are W-2s. This has created a weird dichotomy in dating. I ran into this myself. Okay, I'm telling some personal experience. All right, so this has caused a weird experience for you in dating. Where you want to be honoring yourself because your business is your passion. You want to share your passion, but it's also made it so that it's been really hard for you to be open when you're actually going out. This has made it very hard for you to date. It's made it very hard for you to go out and say with confidence that this is what I do. And yes, I want to be with you, but please, can we just focus on the relationship first? And then we'll talk about what I actually do later. But that also can be a little bit weird and elusive to the woman, right? And that makes it very, very awkward. It makes a very weird experience. Meanwhile, you also have an audience that feels like some of them, not all of them, but there's like 1% of them that feel like you owe them for some reason and that they're involved in your life and your privacy is being misinterpreted as being secret. And that's not true at all. You don't owe them anything. And that's a weird thing that's happened to you. What could you do as a man in the situation to go date and not be alone, not be lonely and go date some of these, some of the women that you want to, and because you're looking for a relationship and something that is long-term, but you also know that you've created an audience and you've created a business that is very public and some of it on accident and created this weird dating scenario. It's like don'tbelonely.com, right? Or richandlonely.com, right? Or it's so like, publicbusinesslonelylife.com or, you know, those would be the domain names that I come up with. But notice that I've taken a relationship thing and I positioned it towards the money industry. Okay, I'm going to end with this story. I know it's been kind of a longer episode, but like, I can't tell you how important it is what I'm telling you right now. Okay, selling, making sales and more cash and sales opportunities and money opportunities is the easiest industry to make a lot of money in. And this is where I first learned this. When I was in college, I was doing real estate stuff. And I kind of alluded to that. I just was like, oh my gosh, Kiyosaki does real estate. You know, most billionaires happen because of real estate. I was like, real estate, let's go, you know. You know, I want to be an influential individual. I do. And I want to help influence people for good, you know, and money absolutely affects that and affects the speed that I can do it in. And, you know, if you need any evidence of that, look at Elon Musk and look at rich people. Look at things that are happening. You know, money does affect money affects speed, right? It collapses time. So anyway, so I was doing real estate stuff. So what I was doing is I was putting up these different I was following a guy named Sean Terry on the internet, and he had a guy, he might still be doing it. I haven't looked it up in probably, I don't know, 8 years, 10 years. He had this program called Flip to Freedom. And I listened to every single one of his podcast episodes while I was in the gym in college, and I devoured it. And I was like, I'm going to go do this. And so what I was doing is I was buying inheritees lists. So these are houses that people inherited.
you know, or properties in general, you know, somebody died or, you know, whatever, is someone, you inherited a property and there's taxes, sometimes there's mortgages on it, and people don't want, a lot of times people don't want a second house. So what we were doing is I was literally writing, I was taking a legal pad piece of paper with a red marker, and I would write a handwritten letter to these inheritees, and I'd say, hey, I know you don't know me, but I'd like to talk about buying that house that you got, you know, and we wouldn't seal the envelope. It did not look like junk mail. It was like really the first real business attempt that I was doing. Anyway, so I did that. And then I also put up these, like, they're called bandit signs. I don't know why they're called that, but it's those signs you see on the side of the road while you're driving. All right. To say, like, we'll buy your house fast for cash. We'll sell your house fast, or have a house to sell fast for cash. And, what you're doing is it's called a double escrow, and you're getting a house under contract and then turning around and selling it within the closing period, and you take the spread. And it's, anyway, so I did that, and I got 300 phone calls in the first month. It was nuts. And it was a small little town I was doing it in. 300 phone calls in the first month. And so I got good at appraising value, and I would go write contracts, and I ended up getting 7 properties under contract in the first, like, couple months. 5 houses, so 5 residential and 2 commercial. I didn't know how to sell. It's one of the reasons I went to door to door. So I didn't know how to flip any of them, which really sucked. So I ended up not, being able to freaking close any of them, but I learned a lot, man. This is like my first real business attempt. Like real, you know, if I could just close one of those, I would, you know, anyway, I learned a lot though. My gosh, I learned a lot. So, anyway, I got a phone call while I was doing all that, to get back to the point here. I got a phone call from this guy. I won't say his name. I think he's still over there, and I think he's still doing it. He's a realtor. And I might have said this on the podcast before, but it was a long time ago, so bear with me if you've heard it, but it's such a good lesson, and it's where I learned what I'm telling you right now. He called me, and he goes, and I thought he was calling about a house, so I was like, hey, what's the property? You know, I started asking those questions, and he kept trying to get past them. He's like, no. He goes, your name's Steve? I said, yeah. He goes, I'm trying to tell you, I know what you're doing. I said, oh, okay. He goes, tell me about yourself. And I was like, well, I'm in college. He goes, you're in college, you're doing this. I said, yeah. You know, I had really just started college. For real, you know, I had a practice run out of it and got kicked out. This was the second time I came back. And so I was doing really well in school, and I was super disciplined and just really got to it, you know, and he goes, meet with me. I want to teach you some stuff. And I said, okay. So I got in my car, drove over to the stranger's office, and I sat down with him, and he goes, I know what you're doing. He said, where did you learn all this? And I started telling him. He's like, that's amazing. He goes, I do this. He's like, what you're doing is how I started. And, you know, he had his own office inside this, you know, brokerage, and really interesting. You know, he's among the more successful realtors in the area. And he goes, something you need to understand is that you are already doing more, and I don't want this to offend anybody, but I need, again, marketers deal in stereotypes. We do. We're not judging it, but we deal in them. Okay. He goes, you need to understand that what you're doing is already more than the stereotypical realtor. I was like, what are you talking about? I remember I laughed. I was like, that's not true. I'm like, what's, no. I'm trying to compete here, right? I want to flip these. I want to do double escrows. Like, one of these a semester would more than pay for my year, right? And he's like, no, I get it. He's like, but you have to understand. He said the standard, you guys know, like, the average realtor only makes, like, what is it, like 50 grand a year? It's something like that. It's basically a teacher's salary, maybe a little bit more. Like, realtors don't usually make that much money. And I remember fighting him on the point a little bit. It was face-to-face with him. And I was like, that's crazy. It's like, these people that I'm studying and learning about, they're making so much money. He's like, that's why they're unique. They're making a lot of money selling real estate. A lot of realtors don't make that much money. And I was like, how are they, like, alive? How do they pay for their livelihood? And he said this next line that made me realize that whatever I do in the future, I must adhere to this principle. He said, the reason that realtors are still alive and have a profession is because of what they're selling. They're selling a property that, you know, let's say $100,000, by virtue of the price of the thing that they sell, they can actually only sell a couple of them per year and still have a livelihood, even if it's not that great. I was like, whoa. Think about that. Just because what they're selling is so expensive, they can afford to not understand that much marketing and still, like, have a livelihood. I was like, holy cow. If I get used to selling things that are more expensive, right? I don't even have to be that good at the sales of it, still deliver what I sold and have a lifestyle. Now, I really want you to understand, like, imagine if you learned any amount of marketing or any amount of sales or any true offership, right? And building an offer and putting a stuff together, right? It's, it just compounds what you can earn. Like, it's crazy, right? The potential just goes way up. But I was like, that's really, really fascinating. Where this was reinforced to me was actually when I was in the Army. And all units in the Army, or all companies rather, right? Which is, you know, at least 200 guys usually, it's around, you know, they're soldiers. They have these different shops. Well, the S4 shop, so it's like the S1, S2, S3, S4, S5. The S4 shop is supply. And so that shop, whoever runs the S4 shop, beans and bullets, right? They're controlling food, they're controlling equipment, they're controlling ammo, they're controlling all that stuff. And I learned really quickly that those who were friends and became buddy-buddy with the S4 shop owner, right, of whatever the unit was, whatever the company was, or, you know, whatever it was, right, your unit, they would sometimes get a little bit of favoritism because they'd be like, hey, here's the better gun, you know, or hey, here's the better MRE, you know, they're all numbered, hey, or hey, here's the better, you know, bivy sack or pouch, or you know, body armor, right? Hey, here's the better, you know, and I was like, interesting, become friends with supply. And I was like, interesting, become friends at the fountainhead of cash. How do I do that? Well, I choose an offer type. I choose a product. I choose a price. I choose an industry. I stack all cards in my favor, right? So that when tough times come, I am more easily, I've built more of a moat around me. And a lot of that is done with the business model that you choose, right? You want to change your life? Sell expensive stuff to people who are rich. Done. Next step, sell expensive stuff to people who are rich that helps them actually replace the cash that they spent, right? Increase their sales, increase their net worth, whatever it is. It's like so much easier to go sell because they're like, oh yeah, I can consciously understand how this is going to actually replenish and has the potential to make more sales than the cost of what I spent, right? That's like it. A big fat red ocean, screw blue ocean, I hate it. Stay in the big red oceans, it's where the most money is anyway. Sell expensive stuff to the people who have money and sell a thing that has the most make more sales opportunity in it. The end. Okay, I went a long way to help you guys see this. Okay, a long way. But those of you who are like really struggling and you've been selling these little widgets, I sell little widgets too. I sell things that are cheap also, but it's always a front end and it's always a lead gen for the grander product. I have a $100,000 offer. I also have a $250,000 offer. Okay. I have a stuff that is significantly less expensive, but guess what? Every single one of those things is somehow one or another referencing the fact that I have these other bigger things. So what I'm really doing is I'm using all my cheap stuff for marketing. I'm liquidating my ad spend so that I can bring more faces and people into the fact that I have this thing that's more expensive in the back. Does that make sense? I feel like I need to stop now because I'm getting kind of a little preachy, but I want you guys to really think about what I'm talking about with this. A lot of you have an amazing product or an amazing solution to an amazing problem, but what's missing is positioning. Positioning is definitely one of the most elusive, challenging concepts in all of marketing. And what I find is that the inner entrepreneur is the one who's creating most of the positioning for most businesses, and it's wrong. They're talking about the offer. You don't sell something by talking about it. All right. If that's what you're doing, the inner entrepreneur is the one who's been driving your sales and marketing. All right. That's when I can read someone's headline and I can tell
when the inner entrepreneur mentality is the mentality that wrote the copy. I can tell when the entrepreneur is the one who built the funnel. They shouldn't. It's a totally different skill set, mindset, and discipline. Wildly different mindset. All right. I can tell. And so the saddest thing that I see, and that's why I exist as a business, by the way, I help innovators. I help innovators who are not getting the amount of attention and noise that they need, bring a ton of noise and attention and lead flow to their innovation. Because what tends to happen is the innovator is so intimate with what they've created, right? That they actually are blind to how the thing needs to be marketed to get lead flow and sales flow and cash flow into the business itself. It's a different mindset, right? Steve Wozniak really created the computer. Steve Jobs was the marketer. They're two in the biggest businesses. They're always two different people. But our world tries to have the same person be the marketer and the entrepreneur and the funnel builder and the salesperson, four different roles, by the way, and the business owner, and you're the coach, and you're going to go learn taxes, and you're going to get, right? You understand like how obscene it is to have this expectation that we're going to go in and we're going to learn every role perfectly, and we're going to go learn how to do them all amazingly, and everything I do is going to bring cash into the, it's crazy. It's like, no wonder we get burnt out, right? Learn one role really, really well, figure out, and do, in my opinion, my advice would be, figure out which one of the roles that I just said you're actually more natural in and love the most and could be like, this is my full-time career from moving forward forever. And then outsource the rest, right? Or partner with one or two other people. Like the coolest things that I'm in right now, this shirt thing that we're doing. I don't know how the e-com business works. Well, not the way that he's doing it. And I could go take the time to learn it, but that actually would slow me down. I'm a marketer, right? I'm a pretty good entrepreneur. I'm a marketer, right? And so my job is to bring attention and noise and effort and energy and excitement and lead flow to this thing, messaging, positioning. That's me, right? Someone else is managing the thing. Someone else is running the ads, although of course I help with the messaging of the ads. Someone else is actually creating the content. Someone else is managing the weekly meeting that we have, right, with just these epic killers. Someone else is building the funnels. Someone else, I'm not, like, people just try to do too much stuff and they make these organizations that don't, they literally can't test fast enough to be successful. You know, it just takes them 6 months to get a project out the door. They don't know if it's actually going to work. And neither do I, right? At some point, there is some guesswork involved. And then it's like, took me 10 years to find the thing that sells. And I'm like, could have taken 10 months if you just found the right. Anyway. All right. Totally preachy right now. All right. That's the point. Profit is not created equally. Yeah, you got to have an amazing offer. That's par for the course. But the real secret sauces after that are the energy you bring to the game, the way you position it, the way you position it with the make money or more sales space. And even if you're not in the make money space, still find a way to relate it to it. And it could just be with the avatar that you choose, right? Division of labor. Don't try to be everything. I've never seen anybody get to the $1 million mark on their own. Business is a team sport. It is. It's a team sport. I've seen people get to, and I believe I even got to the six-figure range solo, which is great. But I was freaking exhausted. Right? It was so intense, guys. Oh my gosh. Oh, it was so hardcore. That's why I like so desperately just started hunting someone to do it with. Oh, division of labor, man. Is that Abraham Lincoln? Anyway. All right, guys. If you are interested at all in getting some kind of capitalism swag, go to wethepigs.com. Kind of like we the people. Wethepigs.com. We got awesome, awesome swag there. If you're interested in me personally building your funnel with Jake Leslie also, it's just he and I, go to funneltactics.com. And if you want to learn more about my, mastermind, or a product that we have called Profit Lab, which helps somebody take their idea and make it profitable. And all the engines and pieces and parts and systems that it takes to actually make something profitable. You know, it's business is 80% the same. So we got something called Profit Lab. It's awesome. Go to titansofindustry.com. All right. You guys are awesome. We'll see you guys later. Hopefully that was helpful to you. I would re-listen to this episode a million times because the secret sauce inside of it is absolutely, this is one of the most important things that you can learn. And honestly, it's why my first 34 offers failed. 34. It took me 5 years to finally hit number 35. And it was these things. This is what helped me realize. I was like, oh, I keep creating a really cool solution to a problem, but I'm not positioning it correctly, which is why it's never taken off. And then I remember all these lessons and all these things popped in my mind and suddenly clicked. And I was like, oh my gosh. And the next 55 offers in a row worked for me. I was like, got it. I see it. Anyway, good reminder. You guys are amazing. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe. Please let me know what you think about it. I do read your guys' reviews. That actually means the world to me. You know, I spend a lot of money to get this content in front of you guys. And, it's really, 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 really energizing to hear what you guys think about it. If there's something you guys want me to teach about funnels, there's something you guys want me to go over, please let me know. If you like the episode, please tag me in something. It helps me so much, seriously. And sometimes I spend a lot of time going, what can I teach? I absolutely take you guys' advice on creating episodes. And by the way, I love doing interviews also. If you guys want me to be on whatever you guys got, whether that's a summit or I've had people interview for blog articles or podcasts or YouTube stuff or whatever, I'll pretty much get on anyone's thing as long as they have a thing. I just require that they're past like 20 or 30 episodes of whatever they do. I'm not someone's first interview, you know what I'm saying? But go to cjlarson.com, click on interview. And that goes for stages as well. Anyway, I'm like blatantly pitching, but I just gave you some seriously epic stuff that I usually charge for. So I hope that that's helpful. And hopefully you guys feel an exchange of value. You guys are amazing. Go be capitalists. And we'll see you guys in the next episode.